Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 28th, 2014. You're listening to the longest running, the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I've got full tilt made me whole long.
Made you whole long, huh?
That actually sounds pretty bad. To rehearse that.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? Before we even get to that, we have so much going on this week. Let's see. A poker player is back on Survivor. Local WSOP circuit winner here gets disqualified and banned. But, you know, there's only so much time in a show that we can dedicate to these things. So hit those topics next week. Because this week, like you said, Full Tilt made Scott Long whole.
Taking that stuff down to McDonald's with a couple extra bucks and getting myself a biggie size Happy Meal.
Happy Meal, that's right. And we get to share the toy, though, right?
Like you, of course, yeah.
Bring the toy over to the house on weekends. Okay, cool. We were alerted to this by one of our ambassadors. But did you get an email, too? Did you get a specific thing saying you got
I got 100 emails. I got my email for mine, and then I got a bunch of other listeners that apparently know they don't. You don't want to be bothered, so they emailed me directly instead of us.
Well, they know I had no money on there. You're the only one that had money on there.
But, no, what was really funny about it is one of our longtime listeners actually emailed me about a week ago saying that he got something showed up in his bank account from Full Tilt. And I'm like, really? And I'm like, well, I best log on to my bank account and see whether I've got it as well, too. And I logged on, and there was nothing. I'm like, what's going on? So then I just totally forgot about it because, again, I had like $7.47 or something ridiculous in that, so... If it never came, it didn't bother me. I only wanted the check, as people remember, and I'm not even going to get a check. It's just electronic transfer. So I didn't worry about it, and then all of a sudden, I actually logged on to my email account a couple days whenever they sent out the emails and so on. I'm like, woohoo! And then I'm like, I don't need to share this with everyone because everybody else knows. And then, boom! 4,000 other people share it with me. So, yeah, it's a very happy day in the poker world for lots of people. And I get it, for people that had a ton more money on there. I mean, I was watching some Facebook and Twitter responses to it, and the people that had some significant money on there were really in tears, as they should have been, just because they never thought it was going to happen.
Right.
So feel really happy for them. For me, it's just fun.
It's a great story.
It is.
And
could have been a greater story, but it's a good story.
And what do you do with a windfall like that? Now, I know you can only go to McDonald's, but the guys who are getting like 5 and maybe even 6 figures back, I mean, do you just automatically go back out and go crazy playing poker again with it, or do you say... Oh, okay, this is like a gift. I'm going to, you know, invest it, or, you know, what do they do with that money?
I think you put it all in carbon poker. Hey, I cheated death once. I'm going to cheat death again. No. No, I would hope, you know, I think one of the lessons here, I think, I hope some people take away from it is what we've always preached on the show, the wild, wild west of the online, and tread carefully there. But I think more so just the fact that I don't think a lot of poker players really ever have encountered this, where money that you thought was safe disappeared.
Right.
And then you had this artist process to get it back. I mean, it's been almost 3 years now, right?
Yeah.
To get it back. And I'm sure there's poker players that have, you know, dropped money in a casino or something like that, or they've loaned money to a buddy that hasn't paid. That stuff happens all the time. But I think like this, is a wake-up call for a whole segment, a different segment of poker players that have always been more responsible with their money. And I think this is one of those things where, you know, hey, you get a little loose in a pot with 7 deuce and flop 2 pair and get it all in against somebody who had a monster hand that's better than yours, and you river that full house and you're like, woof, all right, never going to do that again. I think that's kind of the thing now. It's just I hope the people that they're getting money back are, you know, it's sort of money they can do whatever they want to with it. But I'm hoping that the real lesson here is just to be a little bit more responsible with it, and a greater appreciation for money that that these people thought was gone, and now it's back.
Yeah, and use it in an environment that is regulated in you know, like brick and mortar rooms or Nevada, Delaware. Which, by the way, that's our next item.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean to make that segue. I was just thinking Nevada, Delaware, and you know, wherever they're New Jersey, where they're having legal, not legal, because it was never really illegal, but you know what I'm saying, regulated poker.
Regulated poker.
But that's a big deal now that's coming out, and it's exactly what we thought was going to happen when states started to pipe up and say, you know what, feds, screw you, we're going to do it ourselves, and Nevada and Delaware are teaming up now, right?
Yeah, the two governors signed agreements this week to allow citizens of both those states to join a combined player pool for online poker. Now, Delaware allows all kinds of casino games. Nevada's just poker, so this is just a poker thing.
Right.
There's all kinds of technological stuff they have to work out before it can actually take place. But this is the first teaming up of states become an intrastate rather than an interstate online poker thing. So I think the next hope, obviously, is that New Jersey's going to join this, and then it's kind of off to races. If they can get those three together, then I think it's going to make it a lot easier for other states to agree to bring online poker into their state, and then eventually join this player pool. And then, as you said, hopefully, you know, once the federal government sees all this stuff happen, they're just going to say, hey, you know, it's time to shut this down. We're going to get in there and do our own thing and do a federal thing, which I think is what we all, well, I should say all of us want, most of us want. And, but no, it's a good first step. And,
yeah.
It's definitely a great first step for, and it's interesting that these two states, because, you know, everybody always says, hey, you know, hey, Nevada's great for this, right? Well, Nevada, I mean, a lot of people I've talked to since it started is, and the Nevada sites have not been doing phenomenally well. They've been doing okay. And the reason is just not a, I mean, Nevada is a lot of land out there. Don't get me wrong. I've driven through a lot of it and not a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. I mean, you know, Cactus and stuff like that can't play online poker. You need actual people. And obviously, you don't have to be a resident. You can just be a tourist, which I always thought that the marketing for the Nevada would be more towards the tourist market. And I've been really surprised that almost all the marketing has been to the Nevada market. So from where I sit, I'm not surprised that Nevada's not doing better, because it's really odd marketing strategy. I think Delaware, of course, we knew was going to be a problem anyhow. I mean, there's not even land there, let alone people.
Right.
And so, I mean, the hope there was that they had the other casino games. But I think they were doing, I saw a report the other day that they did, they're doing less in monthly revenue than some poker rooms here in Florida are doing, some of the smaller poker rooms. So even the availability of blackjack and roulette or whatever else they have on those things is not doing a ton for Delaware as well, too. So the two get together will be fine. New Jersey's doing phenomenally better, and I think we all kind of knew that because you got all those people crossing the bridge from New York into New Jersey. So
right.
You got a lot bigger population base there. And, you know, I think some people are saying that they're not so sure that New Jersey's going to be interested in joining on this, because they're actually holding the cards now. You know, they got all the players.
Yeah, and they're doing so well. Why share that?
Exactly, which is a short-sighted view, if that's actually the view, and I haven't seen anybody officially say that, but kind of short-sighted, because, you know, eventually if Nevada and Delaware sign up, you know, a bunch of Iowas and Arkansas and things like that of this, that then they're going to become bigger than New Jersey alone. But it's interesting to see where it goes next. I mean, I think it's easy to make that logical step that New Jersey is going to join on soon, but I think there's some people that think that might take a little longer than it sounds like it should.
Can you tell me that you said Delaware has the other gaming as well? Do they have sports books too? I don't know.
No. In Delaware, they don't have sports books because that's not allowed, but they do have sports parlays that you can play. So you can only bet on parlays in the actual casinos in Delaware.
Right, so you can't do that online, though, with their...
But, you know, I honestly don't know. It's possible. I really haven't anybody had asked me that, so I haven't looked into it, but it's possible.
I was just curious, because I know you and I have talked about, you know, you could have, like, five people on a site if there's enough sports betting or something on there where it'll survive, because they almost never lose, that kind of thing. So I was just trying to figure out why Delaware was struggling so much if they had a full casino online.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point, is the fact that they do have blackjack and other casino games. I'm not sure about the sports parlays, but they do have those other casino games that you'd only need one person to play.
Yeah.
And it's still not doing phenomenally well. And again, that's probably because there's just a very, very small player base there. You know, I've always tracked poker revenue since we've been in business. I haven't really tracked overall gaming revenues anywhere, so I don't really know what to expect there. I think everybody was hoping that it was going to be more than what it seems like it has been, though.
Yeah.
For all those games. I mean, obviously Nevada would be doing phenomenally better if they were able to offer all those games, I would think. You know, because in Nevada, too, the other reason, I think one of the reasons that they're a little apprehensive about marketing it to tourists is that when they get tourists into town, they want them in the brick-and-mortar casinos.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons they offer poker in Nevada is because they hope it, you know, and why they bury the poker room back in the back, wherever it is. They want you to walk through the slot machines and table games and the buffet and the shows and that to get there and hope that you're going to do something that produces more revenue for them. So, you know, to encourage poker players to come there and just sit in the hotel room and play poker, they don't make a ton of money off that. If they could attract people to come to the Las Vegas and play slots in their hotel room, that's a completely different story. But you know, there's not a lot of interest from legislators on going that far yet, although Delaware and New Jersey have, so...
All right. Well, stay tuned, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on this story as it develops and see if New Jersey actually joins on someday. And if not, you know, we'll see what the numbers are for these two states. You know, we talked last week from while you were on the road. Now you're home, and you visited a lot of places, even though you're only gone for about, 10 days or so?
Yeah, it seemed about 100, but... A lot of the car. It's funny because normally the stuff we would just packed it all in last week's show. But had I known that all this news was going to break this week, I would have done that. But we were trying to space it out, so we had stuff to talk about. Now we're just stockpiling stuff. But yeah, a lot of fun stuff happened on this trip that I didn't get to mention because we only spent the time talking about California last week. And I'll run through some of the less exciting stuff because I got a good story about a tournament here that I want to spend some time with. But it's getting hard for me to find poker rooms that I haven't been to yet. And this trip, I went to 5 of them that I haven't been to. A couple up in northern Arizona. My first time down in Tucson area. And I went to the two poker rooms down there, very nice rooms. And then, of course, Inn of the Mountain Gods, which I was recording the show from last week. Gorgeous property, and hoping we get back there. So I always like seeing these new rooms, and I'm not going to give reviews of all of them, but certainly you can learn more about them in the pages of Antioch Magazine. But one of them actually is hardcore advertising Chinese poker, open-faced Chinese poker in there.
Ooh.
Which I think is interesting for a small room, again, because I just don't, I haven't really figured out how rooms truly make enough revenue off of that. But I can see a small room that, you know, if you only got a couple people in there, you can get a game going with Chinese poker with two people, that you can't get a hold'em game going with two people. So I thought that was kind of interesting. This is the first time, and again, I traveled a crap ton. I've probably been to 200 poker rooms in this country. And this is the first time I've seen this, and there were at least 4 rooms, I think, on this trip that I went to that has this policy, no alcohol on the gaming floor.
Wow.
See, even you're shocked by that, right?
Yeah, and I'm a teetotaler.
Yeah. I mean, one of them was in California. I was up there, and, just talking to the poker manager, and he's like, well, yeah, you know, obviously we don't have alcohol on the floor. I'm like, huh, what? And he's like, yeah, it's a tribal thing. They just don't like to have. I mean, you can go to the bar and get a drink if you want, or the restaurants, but you can't have it in the poker room or blackjack slider area like that. I'm like, wow, really? I mean, because they're obviously here in Florida, and there's some other casinos I've been to in California, Oklahoma, where you have to pay for your beer. You know, they don't comp it.
Right.
That was a big stretch for me. I'm like, huh? I'm like, yeah, I'll take a beer, please. Come on, I'm like, $6. I'm like, $6 for what? And I got to buy the beer here. I'm like, what? But now, I mean, places you can't even drink. And so then I thought that was really just that one tribal, right? But no, at least three more rooms after I left there all said the same thing. And I'm like, wow. So what I want to talk about that is, from a player standpoint, good or bad?
If you're a player who doesn't like to drink, I think it's bad. Because people who do like to drink generally get looser with their play, as a poker player, I mean.
Right, right.
Get looser with their play and maybe aren't as sharp as they could be, and that would help pad your bankroll. But at the same time, I have to say it's also good because a lot fewer arguments and you know, just people, you know, having to wake them up to call their big blind, you know, or whatever. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. I am wondering why that is the rule when most people go to a casino for the alcohol, and the fact that they can go for free alcohol at most of these casinos is the whole thing that gets them in the door. So you're like losing 50% of your business or whatever the number would be because you're not offering drinks on the floor while you're gambling. That's like they go hand in hand like peanut butter and jelly, you know, for most people. And the fact that you're not even giving them drinks for free, never mind even the option to pay for it, that's pretty weird. I mean, I'm not condemning anything. It's fine with me. Yeah. If that's how they want to run their business, that's cool. It just seems like if there were two casinos and I like to drink and there's one that has it and one doesn't, which one, no matter how bad the one is that does, I'm still going to go there.
Well, I think interestingly, the ones that I went to that had this policy were really the only game in town. So
yeah, there you go.
Have that competitive pressure that you're mentioning. And yeah, I think the same thing real quickly is just that, you know, because I was talking to the poker manager and I'm like, well, you know, my first initial thought is people love playing poker against drunks because they can just take all their money, right? So I can see some people, even if you don't drink, being really upset that you don't have the ability to have these people compromising themselves at the table, right?
Right.
And then the other thing I could tell is, you know, I get really annoyed at the table when people are just being jerks. And you take away alcohol, and that takes away about 90% of the jerks at the table.
Yeah.
So it's probably a more peaceful place to play. And, you know, it doesn't prevent anybody from being drunk from stumbling into the poker room playing, right? They go down the bar and get trashed and say, hey, I'm going to go play poker. So you still get that benefit, I guess, without just the constant annoyance.
Yeah, it's just that if you're going to get hammered and pay the rent too for a company, you might as well stay home and get hammered. You know what I mean?
Well, true.
The other thing then is I wonder is because it's a monopoly and they don't have really any competition, are they just saying, you know what, we're not going to have alcohol on the floor because that would lead to people wanting comps and then we're going to have to give the alcohol for free. And if we don't give the alcohol for free,
well,
you know what I mean? Is that kind of thing? Or
well,
it
depends. Again, that's a competitive thing too because there are some jurisdictions. I mean, like I said, California, Oklahoma I've been to where, you know, they're legally not allowed to comp alcohol. I mean, if you're legally not allowed to, then it doesn't matter. You can just tell people, hey, we can't. There's other places I've been that they're just monopoly, and they're like, you know, hey, you're going to buy the drinks. We don't care.
Yeah.
And that's always funny to me because that's one of the allures. That's the one comp that everybody gets at a casino, right? It's a free drink.
Right.
And go to a place and have them say, no, sir, you got to buy a drink. And then I look around and people are buying drinks. Everybody buys drinks. I don't care. They're like, oh, well, we want it free, but whatever. I still need to have my beer. So well, here's your $6. So as a business owner, I'm like, why am I getting given away if people are willing to pay it for it?
Right.
But the other interesting thing is one of these rooms used to allow 18 to 20-year-olds to gamble. And then they decided not to. And so I'm like, wow. I would think that if you had no alcohol on your floor, you would want the 18 to 20-year-olds in, right? Because you don't have that headache of hacking the car or having somebody actually, you know, accidentally get served or whatever. You know, all those legal headaches you have. At that point, why wouldn't you want that play from those younger kids? I guess not kids.
But the tweeners.
The tweeners, yeah. Why would you not want that play from them? If you don't have the headache of having to worry about alcohol, right?
Yeah, it is kind of confusing. And you would think that that's the reason why, another reason why they would have that rule, so they could open up that extra group of, you know, 18 to 20-year-olds. But, well, it is a little perplexing. But, I mean, to me, it doesn't really bother me either way.
No, I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, though.
Been on the road for 6 years now. It's the first time I've ran into that.
And you saw a bunch of them on this trip, too. That's weird.
Yeah. So, and in different states. It wasn't like they're all lined up. So.
Yeah. Weird.
All right, so real quick, we were in line at one place, and I looked over and I actually saw a penalty list in one of the poker rooms I went to.
Cool.
And we're going to bring back the call the floor feature here a little later, so I know that's a big popular thing for people. But I've actually never seen a penalty list. Have you seen a penalty list where it lists the infractions that you can have, the first warning, the second warning, and the third warning?
No.
And the different penalties for it?
No,
I think
never.
It's pretty – one, I think it's interesting they actually wrote it out. And it's always good, I think, to be –
fully explaining to clientele what can happen. And obviously the reason you have a list like that is to let people know, hey, this is what you can't do, even though you probably should already know this. Your mom should have told you not to do this. But if you do it, this is what the penalty is going to be, so really you shouldn't do it because you're not going to like any of these penalties, right?
It takes a lot of pressure off the floor and the dealers and stuff, too, because you don't have to explain it or get in trouble for being lenient on one and not the other. You just point to the board and then point to the area where they have to go stand or whatever. I mean, that's it's right there in black and white for them.
Now, the flip side of it is for somebody that travels like me, it's a little off-putting to walk into a room for the first time or the second time or whatever and see all these things that people obviously have been doing in the room. That they don't want to do. Yeah. You know, you never see a steer clear of the vat of boiling oil in a kitchen unless some idiot's put his hand in it like last week, right?
Yeah.
And so it kind of makes me think, hey, man, maybe this is a room that just has had trouble with the rules and has to be this blatant about posting it.
But it's like the McDonald's drive-thru with that lady with the hot coffee. Now they have that sticker on the window that says, coffee is hot.
But real quick, my favorite one is I'm looking at and I had a funnier bit until I went back and looked at it again because I thought that this said just had an F-bomb rule and not a profanity rule, but they elevated F-bomb to above other profanity. So they had another profanity rule with slightly lesser penalties, right? Uh-huh. But one of the rules was, and this is exactly the way it was worded, F-bomb and in parentheses F-word rule. Isn't that great?
That's great.
I'm like, I was in there like, you know, that's like going to get a word defined in the dictionary, and they just changed the spelling of it. F-bomb. Hey, Joe, what's an F-bomb? Oh, you know, man, the F-word. Oh, the F-word. Yeah. Had no idea. That makes sense.
So they know that everyone knows what F-word is. But they choose to lead the rule with the colloquial F-bomb.
I mean, that's the other thing, right?
That's hilarious. And then correct it anyway and they're within their own rule when they could have just removed F-bomb altogether and made it say F-word rule.
And now, this room had a lot of penalties, right? So I'm not advocating they add more, but I think maybe you can make a case that there should be a slightly bigger penalty for the F-bomb than the F-word, right? If you just mutter the F-word, it's offensive, but not that bad, right? When you bomb it,
yeah.
You know, when people six tables away hear it, that should have something else. So I would be fine with the two if they had different penalties.
Well, some people who aren't good at spelling might think F-bomb means photo bomb. No taking photos of people in the casino. So, and don't get behind them if you're going to take a photo of somebody.
Well, certainly don't say photo then. Don't use the word photo.
Yeah, don't use the word photo.
All right, so the absolute most moving part of this trip for me, too, we were at one of the poker rooms, and I don't want to embarrass this poker manager if he doesn't want this to be known, but, during our travels, we've always, this poker manager's like throwing us a hat or a jacket or everything, just, you know, hey, have one of these, sure. That's always nice, but one of the poker room stops, he just showered us with against hats, he gave us a shirt and a hat. Shot glass, mug, apologize for not being able to give us bomber jacket. Gave us a comfort room, took us to dinner, and we took him to dinner, and then we're like, he couldn't, he's not allowed to comp himself, so he had to pay out of his own money. And I'm like, hey, we'll pick up your. No, I want to pay for my own. Really, really generous of this. And he explained it, he's like, you know, hey, in the Apache culture, it's just the way we do things that when guests come to visit us, we give them gifts.
It's customary.
And he just kind of left it at that. And I got to tell you, I thought about that the entire week after that. Just, it wasn't a quid pro quo, oh gosh, I hope you wear this shirt and hat and promote my property. It's just, hey, this is what we do in our culture.
Wow. That's really nice.
And you like to think that all cultures are like that, but we know they're not, right?
No, of course not.
We're all basically selfish people to begin with, and we have to be almost learned to be non-selfish. And here's a whole culture of people that just really generous with not only their gifts but their time. And that was a real moving part of the trip for me, I think.
That's cool. Very nice.
Obviously, most of this trip, I got to finally meet our new director of sales, Chris Conan. We had him on the show a couple months ago. You know, he's the former publisher of Southwest Poker News, and a lot of this trip was just for me to kind of meet some of his clients, but really enjoyed get to spend a lot of time with him. Probably 14 hours in his car.
Wow.
So I really got to know him very well, and a really great addition to the Indie Up team. And
It was great to go see these rooms and see that people are excited about the merger and what it's going to mean for their little rooms getting national exposure now. So
Cool.
All right, so I know I texted you the morning after this tournament and told you, hey, wait for the story. And I don't want to build it up too much because people might think it's not a great story. But I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. I couldn't come up with the right adjective. It's not the most surreal tournament I played. That seems a little weird. So the best I can come up with is the oddest tournament I've ever played in my life.
Okay.
That's the best word I can come up with it for it, right? Okay. So I've been on the road almost all week. I had not played a hand of cards the entire first week of the trip. I was actually flying back the next day and not played a single hand of poker and totally jonesed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually figured it up. It was 181 hours on this trip and hadn't played. So we were at one of our last stops, and we saw they had a tournament that night. $65 tournament. That was a bounty tournament. $20 bounties. Now, generally speaking, my type of play does not lend itself to bounty tournaments. You know, I'm kind of the tortoise that wins the race at the end.
Yeah.
And you have to be the hare, really, to do well in the bounty tournaments. You know, because yeah. you got to be aggressive and chip up, and because you can't knock people out if you don't have more chips than them, right?
Right.
And that's just not the way I normally play.
No, so you're not the short stack ninja.
Exactly. So I'm not really excited about bounty tournaments. I try to avoid them if I can. But, you know, I've been jonesing, right? I want to play. $65, that's fine, whatever. So we played the tournament. I sit down in my seat, and we had three almost complete beginners sitting at our table.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not going to criticize these people because I've been there, you've been there, we've all been there. These people need to learn to play somewhere, and I ended up knocking two of them out, so that's $40, so certainly glad they were at my table. But when you've been jonesing for a week to play poker, you kind of want to sit down and play poker, right? You don't want to have the frustration of, hey, is it on me? How much can I bet? Yeah. Or the, oh, it's $200, oh my gosh, give it and they giggle forever, and it's like, you know, you got 12,000 in your stack, and 200 is nothing, it's a standard bet. Oh my gosh, I don't know if I could, So that was kind of frustrating, right? And then we also had an assistant dealer at our table. Have you ever had one of these people, right, where they're always like, hey, the blinds are up now, 150, 300. Hey, just give him 100 change and move on. No, he's got the flush over there, right, and is never right with any of those things.
So he's a horrible table captain.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, hey, it's like the dealer doesn't exist, so he's going to tell people what it is, but facts be damned, right? So I had him on one side, I had this beginners on the other side, so I was just annoyed at this table, the tournament to begin with. And to add to it, I look over and I see there's an open seat at 4-8 Omaha High-Low, right? Which is my game that I want to play. So I'm like, you know, I wasn't really, at this point, I'm like, fuck, I'm just going to get out of this tournament, I'll try to chip up, and if I don't want to get out, I'll go play Omaha, I'll be happy then, right? Didn't get any hands very often the first couple levels. And then finally started hitting some hands and doing some things and got my chip stack up. And then at the end of like the, I don't know, we got to the second break. I was talking to Chris Cronin and I was like, man, this thing is going to end real quick. At that point, it was like the average chip stack was roughly 15 big blinds. It's tough to say because this poker room didn't do the number of players left on their display.
Uh-huh.
They did the number of tables left.
Oh, yeah.
So then he had to, like, guess, all right, well, I guess there's 9 to 10 players at the table, right, and then do the math, and I'm crappy at math, right? This is also a room that doesn't do a true color-up on chips. You know, when they do the color-up, if you have an odd chip, they just give you the bigger denominator.
Oh, right, right.
So the chips in play was probably off as well, too. So the math was off a little bit, but roughly 15 big blinds, average stack, with, like, 5 tables left. Right,
mm-hmm.
So I think this thing is going to go really quickly, right? And it did, and I hung tight there. I got down to the final 3 tables, and it was just—I mean, like, I'm looking at—and they finally did a color up at that point, and like everybody had like 7 chips, actual physical chips in front of them.
You know, wow. That's
the funniest thing I've ever seen, right?
Wow.
So I kept holding on, got a couple more bounties, and you know, get $20 for a bounty, $65 buy-in, right? So once I get 3 bounties, I'm like, hey, I'm only stuck $5 in this thing, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
And once I got my 4th bounty, I'm like, woohoo, I'm up $15. Who cares what happens? So at that point, I just want to get to the final table and get some more money. And 10th in this tournament was $73 or something, pretty crazy, right?
Right.
But you know, hey, I'll put it with the rest if I get there, right? So I managed to get to the final table. 10-handed, we sit down. They take a break at the final table while they reseat us and everything. At that point,
again, remember the math is off a little bit at this point. At least we know the number of players now, but I don't know the actual chips. I figured it was an average of 6.7 blinds per play. Right?
Wow.
All right. Now, I am never going to be the person to suggest a chop. And if you give me the option of anonymously refusing a chop, I'm going to refuse it almost every time. I just want to play, right? Mm-hmm. With the exception of when there's no play left. And I have never been in a tournament, I can't imagine, ever in my life, where at the final table, the average chip stack was 6.7 blinds. I mean, there's absolutely no play, right?
Right.
This is just, you know, hey, all right, well, whoever gets ace-queen first and doesn't run an ace-king, it's going to double up, right?
Yeah.
And so the most funny thing was I was just waiting for somebody to say chop. Crickets. No one said chop. No one even brought up chop. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to bring it up, even though I think it's ridiculous that we're playing right now. But at this point, so then I'm like, all right, well, people are just going to be shoving all the time, so it's going to happen. No. You had five chips in front of you, five big blinds, right? People were calling the big blind, which is two chips.
Oh, man.
And, like, not just one person at the table, like, everybody at the table.
Why didn't you just keep shoving?
So I kind of turned around. I was, like, looking up at the surveillance cameras. I'm like, Ashton Kutcher's going to come out at some point and say, hey, Scott Long from Antioch, thanks for coming to our room. You've been pumped. I can't believe you haven't asked people to shop yet. So at that point, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to see how this goes. At this point, I didn't really care. I mean, I was guaranteed $73, right? And people just kept blinding themselves out of the tournament. So I'd move up one more, move up another one, move up another one. Still, no chop, ever. Discussion.
Well, you said a lot were beginners in this tournament, right? Maybe they just didn't know to chop.
Maybe, but, you know, at this table, I mean, I got the feeling that at least a couple of these people were there every night. So I don't know. It was really, really weird. So then I got down to, I had three chips left, right?
Yeah.
The big blinds, or one and two chips. I forget what the actual denominator is. It doesn't matter. So I had two chips in the big blind, right? Guy raises. I had something like six tray offsuit. Wow. And I'm like, all right, so here's the thing. You need two cards, right? Can't be that bad. But I'm like, the way people are playing here, really, the strategy, I think, is just survive the blinds. If you survive the blinds, then you've got five, six, seven, depending on how many people are left, hands for somebody else to get knocked out, right?
Yeah.
And you move up, and it wasn't like the steps were like $73, $75, $77. They were pretty substantial at each step. So every player that not knocked out, you got like another person's share. So I look down, and I'm like, you know what? There's not enough money in this pot for me to put my last chip in. So I folded. And, of course, you know, no one said anything because that's how everybody's been playing, right? So now I'm all in blind and the small blind for my one chip, right? Don't even look at my cards. There was a raise, a shove, an overshove, and, of course, I'm all in, right? And so I turn on my cards. Pocket fours.
Wow.
Not kind of nice for a blind hand, right?
Yeah.
But not great when you're up against two people all in, right? Faded everything.
Wow.
Tripled up. Next hand, shoved, tripled up again, and I was off to the races. And ended up heads up with a guy. I looked over at him. We both had like 12 chips in front of us. And I'm like, chop? And he's like, yeah, okay, we'll chop. I'm like, you know, hey, we got the same number of chips at this point. I mean, it's 1,300 for first, it's 900 for second. You know, that's a pretty good payday for a $65 tournament. Plus, we have all these bounties in front of us. I had six. I don't know how many he had. And so this is where I found out why no one brought a chop. Immediately, the tournament director ran over. He's like, whoa, hey, if you guys want to chop, you do that on your own time.
Oh.
Play this out, because if you just want to shove all your chips in, and well, we're paying one of you $1,300, the other one of you $900. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. So the guy's like, oh, yeah, no problem. And we did. We split it up fine. He actually had the extra chip or two, so he actually technically got first. So apparently they just, I don't know if they frown on chops there or they make it difficult. I mean, I can imagine if you had 10 of you trying to figure out in the parking lot the money that goes back and forth, so maybe that's why they don't. So So here's my question on that is that I kind of like a room that doesn't encourage chopping and makes it difficult to chop, but I would want them to also have a tournament structure that doesn't force it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like having your cake and eating it, too. right? I mean, you're not letting them do, the players do what they want, but you're also putting them in a situation that forced them to want to do that, you know? Yeah, that's kind of weird.
And it's tough, because these nightly tournaments, I'll say this all the time when players bitch about it, they're not designed to be World Series tournaments. You know, they're always designed to be 3 or 4 hour tournaments that are either trying to get people in the room or keep them in the room or something like that. So I don't want them to err on the side of changing the structure at all, but, you know. It's just funny to me that I really thought it was surreal. I was looking around, and I'm like, I can't believe no one's got any chips. How do you not want to chop right now?
I can understand why they wouldn't want people to chop for the hassle of it, I guess, but don't you think that you're also opening up a can of worms by saying these guys are going to agree on their own to do what they want to do, and then when the guy changes his mind and says, no, I'm keeping the 1,300, you know, walks away from him, they start a fight or some sort of...
Yeah.
I mean, somebody got shot the other day because they texted in a movie theater.
Oh, I know. I guess that's why they're so vigilant about saying, hey, we do not do chops here if you want to do it on your own.
Yeah.
Because no one that's probably anywhere within earshot of that would testify that they didn't make it abundantly clear that they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, a lot of stuff that was interesting on this trip, and, you know, when people tell me all the time, you know, hey, Scott, you travel a lot. Is poker different everywhere? I'm like, yeah, poker's different everywhere. And this is just it. I think it's just a regional thing that people had never heard of chop, and had I not said anything to this guy, we probably would have played it out. And part of me wanted to play it out, but at that point, it seemed kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So anyhow, last thing, we go up there, and we're figuring out how much he needs to give me for the chop. And he's like, man, this is great. You know, I lost my son 7 months ago. He's 19 years old. This is the first time I've played poker since we laid him to rest, and I'm like, wow.
Wow.
Don't have a story to top that.
Yeah.
Like, wow. I'm just so glad you got out of the house and had a good time and didn't come here your first time playing poker after that and get knocked out by some idiot, you know, on the first orbit. So he left a happy guy, I left a happy guy, and
wow.
Fun trip.
Great story.
All right, so if you guys want to see Annie up on the road, just a reminder, the Annie Up Poker Tour will continue with the Spring Poker Classic at Running Aces in Minnesota, March 4th through the 17th, with the winner of the main event appearing on the cover of the April edition of Annie Up. Poker Geek MN John Somsky will be representing us up there, so come out and say hi to him. Then the tour will set sail on our Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Los Angeles on March 30th. I'll be on board on that, so good seats still available. And I'll be followed immediately by a week-long series at the 101 Casino just north of San Francisco in Petaluma, with the winner of that main event appearing on the cover of the May issue of Annie Up, and I will be up there as well, too. Get off the cruise ship, fly to San Francisco. Chris loves it. He's not going to see me for 2 whole weeks.
The way it's been going, I'm not going to see you for like 3 months.
Pretty much.
Jeez.
And remember, all the details on all these events can be found at AnnieUpPokerTour.com and AntiUpCruises.com. We'll love to see you guys at some events, including the cruises.
Absolutely. Okay, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline, 813-448-1120, or emailed us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor, J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. Check out Jay Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And this is an oldie but a goodie. Poker in the Olympics. Here we go.
Hey, I was wondering, since poker is considered a sport and the Olympics is going on, would it be a summer sport or a winter sport? I'm thinking a winter sport in my case because it's always a cold deck.
I know we've talked about this in the past, right?
Yeah.
But it was kind of timely because the Winter Olympics just finished. And I was, like, totally stoked on the Olympics this year. I don't have a good answer to the guy. I love the cold deck comment.
That is funny.
So that probably is going to tip me into the sense of the Winter Olympics. And I would say I would rather go to the Winter Olympics than the Summer Olympics. And that's kind of crazy because I'm, like, you know,
hate the cold.
Florida through and through.
Yeah.
But the Winter Olympics just looks more fun, doesn't it?
I think so.
In a little village, and, you know, people are having fun. You got, like, luging and bobsledding, curling, you know. Because I'm thinking, you know, there's still a possibility that if poker was in the Olympics, that you or I, and the great physical specimens that we are, would finally qualify for the Olympics. So that's what I'm going to decide. I'm going to decide it's going to be a winter sport, because that's the Olympics that I want to go to.
I started to try to rationalize it by saying, well, it's indoors, and you know, in the winter you want to stay indoors, but you know, like, you know, table tennis is a summer Olympic sport, and that's played inside, so that rules that out. But
swimming, basketball, all swimming,
yeah, they're all indoors. So that is when you could play basketball outside, and you could swim out in the pool. But
true. Play ping pong outside.
You could play ping pong outside, I guess. You do on cruise ships all the time, but
it's very hard to play poker outside.
It's very hard to play poker outside. The wind will blow your cards around. So let's say the wind is the deciding factor, and you have to play inside all the time playing poker. So inside is for winter, and we're going to make it a winter Olympic sport. So now we're going to push it for 2018.
Excellent.
All right, we're going to try to make it get in the 18. We've even used our publisher's column a couple of times, I think, for pushing that it should be an Olympic sport, but never for winter. So now we're going to push for winter. Thanks for the idea. Now I got another column I can write.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to saying hi to my new girlfriend, Eve Muirhead.
Jeez. Well, who was it? Somebody said in the home game. It might have been. I'm not even sure who it said. It might have been Doc or something. But, you know, he said, hey, you know what Scott said about that woman, that Olympian? Man, he's right, man. I'm like, oh, man.
Absolutely.
At least somebody still listens to our show.
Oh, man, curling. That's where all, man, I should have gotten curling in high school, man. I could have got rejected by a whole new group of women.
All right, you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com, and we'll have Anteup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anteup logo version and use code ANTEUP for free shipping. This comes from Dan DeAndrea from Nevada. He says, I was in a cash game in Las Vegas casino during a major tournament series. I had the table loudmouth drunk on my right. See, now you know they offer alcohol there.
Yeah, yeah. They'll take care of that by moving it. I'll give you a list of properties you can go to. You don't have to worry about that.
He says, after he checks the flop, I start to count out a bet, and loudmouth says, whatever you bet, I am calling, so you better be careful. I ask the dealer if that is binding, and he says, yes, verbal is binding. No comment from loudmouth. So I move all in, and loudmouth folds. When I complain, the floor man is called and rules that the player does not have to call because it did not change the action. It did change the action, as I would have bet less to trap this player. I felt very cheated on this ruling. I have heard many times that if a player checks dark before the flop, is that not also binding? So, true?
All right. First of all, I want to thank Jody Russell for all he's done for the Call of Floor, and welcome, Sam. I think a lot of folks, our longtime listeners, remember Sam. He's been on the show a couple times, and he's happy to take it over. And here's what Sam says on this first Call of Floor. Unfortunately, this is a situation that happens too often at a poker table. The dealer incorrectly told you his verbal action is binding. Verbal out-of-town action, out-of-turn action... is only binding if the current action in front of that player doesn't change. For example, if a player bets out of turn, the only time his bet is binding is if the action in front of them doesn't change. Every player would have to check in front of them to not change the action. When a player makes a bet in front of the out-of-turn action, it then gets that player off the hook, and they're able to take the bet back or possibly make a different bet. In your case, you are heads up with a player who has acted out of turn. This is a no-win situation for you. When you make your all-in bet, it does change the action between his out-of-turn promise of calling any bet you made. The dealer should have immediately called the floor before he made any kind of wager. It would have been the same ruling, but at least you wouldn't have been misinformed before you made your wager. I understand it's frustrating when you as a player took the time to properly ask the dealer, but it was misinformation that was given to you. Major tournament series hire a lot of break-in dealers, and unfortunately not all of them are keen to all the rules of poker. As far as your check in the dark question, the reason why that is permitted is because that person has first action. They're not acting out of turn. It would be the same with the person with the first action bet in the dark. Their action is binding because it is in turn.
I would have to say that is a perfect answer.
Very good, isn't it?
That was a very good, perfect answer. It's exactly.
Got me all coffee, though.
Makes a lot. Makes it all the good points, and it's all absolutely true because what he said is I'm calling. Yeah, but it's the action in front of him at that time is no bet at all. So you can't. So very good, Sam. Welcome aboard again, and glad to have you here.
Yeah, one of those confusing things with verbal and binding. You know, that's one of those things that I think every poker player knows from out. That seems like be one of the rules that people learn, no matter who they are or where they are. But you got to learn the application of it too.
Yeah, especially verbal out of town action. I mean, that's when you're trying to be verbal out of town. That's hard to do. So.
Yeah,
Scott. All right, let's complete O'Malley's
move. You can do out of town all the time online. I'm just trying to get back to
you. Can you be verbal online? That's. I guess you could be. Yeah, we got to complete O'Malley's move today. Let's refresh our memories. Here's part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week starts a series of three hands played at a rather large no-limit hold'em game. Keep in mind, the stakes are way above what we're comfortable with, so the decision process is skewed slightly. This particular game is a 10-20 no-limit hold'em cash game. We've overextended ourselves and bought in for over half of our total bankroll, $2,000. We currently sit with $1,790. There are eight players at the table, all of them fairly decent. The under the gun and the plus one folds. The MP calls, and we're in the hijack with the six of spades, six of clubs. We limp, everyone else folds to the big blind, who checks, and we go to the flop with $70 in the pot. It comes down the jack of hearts, ten of spades, six of hearts. The big blind checks, as does the MP. We really like this flop, so we lead out for $50. The big blind folds with little thought, but the MP calls. This guy is a bit of a loose cannon. He currently has nearly 3,000 in front of him, but his stack has gone through some pretty drastic swings. He'll play almost any two cards, within reason. There's about 170 in the pot, and the turn is the 10 of hearts. The MP leads out for 100. We like this card. It could have completed his flush, or maybe he has a naked 10. However, if it is a 10, we're vulnerable to a lot of river cards. So we elect to protect our hand. We raise his bet to 300. The MP wastes little time in shoving his remaining stack in, which has us covered. So we've got an underfull. However, this bet not only represents what we've got in front of us, but it also represents half of our entire bankroll. We're now regretting this overextension. With all that in mind, what's the move?
We're behind three hands. Jack-jack, 10-10, jack-10. Those two pairs seem unlikely to me, but jack-10 is a hand that I think many players would limp with. I don't think many players would quickly shove even a nut flush with a pair on the board. So I really have to give credence to the jack-10 here, I think. If we let our bankroll influence our decision, I think it's fine to fold here. But if we're playing properly and without consideration for the stakes, I think it's too tight to fold when realistically we're behind just one hand and have two outs to beat even that.
Yeah, this is tough. You know, the underfull is a heartbreaking hand, but it's more prevalent in Omaha. Since this is no-limit hold'em, I'm going to go ahead and call here and hope either has just a flush or three tens. Not sure why we're playing above our means like this, but if you put your butt in the seat, then you have to play as if it's no big deal and play optimum, make optimum decisions. So let's see what happens.
Hello again. We have to put the thought out of our minds that this is for half of our bankroll and just make the proper poker decision. That decision is this. Call. This could be an overbet with a made hand to seem like a bluff. It could be a flush, or it could be a 10. If he had us beat with the way we've played the hand, I don't think he would shove here. With all this in mind, we do have a strong hand, too strong to fold. We make the call. Our opponent tables the Queen of Clubs, 10 of Clubs, and a harmless 7 falls on the river. We rake in the pot. Until next time, this is Malcolm O'Malley breathing a huge sigh of relief. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, again, I think the lesson here is to avoid playing this far over our bankroll.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to get better as a player if you don't occasionally play over your head. But I think one step up is the way to go here. I mean, most of the O'Malleys are 1-2 no limit. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally 2-5. So I would think, you know, that step up for him would be 5-10 at most, not all the way to 10-20. I think, you know, that's just too big stakes to play. It messes up your mind. And definitely with no limit, because, you know, we're in a situation here for our bankroll, right?
Yeah.
You don't get that in a limit. You know, I've occasionally stepped up to 10, 20 before I was comfortable from that. That was way above my means and limit. But it was a limit. So, you know, I got down that river bed, and it was $20, you know, or 40 if I get raised. I mean, it's nothing like this. I mean, this is, you know, car.
Potentially
be bidding.
I would never get into a game that is so much larger than what I'm comfortable with, because all I could think about was the money. And not what was important, which is the correct move. So I'm glad I made the right move here, but let's get a table change. Right now.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of this Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. Longtime listener Eric Wellman goes by Nuance on the forums. It's been on a couple of our cruises. Is back this month. He actually hasn't had some swag in a while, so he qualifies.
All right.
And he's got what he calls a situation of the week. He had about 7 A's there, so hope I got them all in
there. Wow.
All right. And he actually emailed me ahead of time. He's like, "Hey, does Chris read the Hand of the Week before him?" And I'm like, "Chris doesn't read anything."
I don't even read Scott's emails.
Yeah, like, "Hey, did you get that email?" Like, "Yeah, God, I didn't read it. I didn't know you wanted to read it."
I thought you were just sending it for my benefit. It doesn't mean I have to read it.
So he's like, "All right, cool. I'm going to send one in then, because, you know, I think he's just going to say fold right away." And I don't know. So he says, this hand might provide oodles of conversation. I'm sure it will. Even the most basic hands seem to be creating oodles of conversation for us lately.
Yeah.
Or it may also fall flat with Chris declaring fold before it even starts. Well, we know he's got to do that.
Fold, fold.
There hasn't been a hand of the week in the last, you know, since Nixon was president, and you haven't said fold. Right?
That's right.
And you're not even the type player here.
I know.
All right, he says he's playing a 25-cent, 50-cent home game. His initial buy-in of $100 was lost early on, and we bought for 60 and roller-coastered it up and down to squiggly 120. The villain has been playing tight aggressive all night. He started with a $60 buy-in and built it up thoroughly at night to squiggly 180. Usually this player ended the night around even, so this was a big rush for him. He's starting to play more pipes. That would be awesome. He had a pipe organ at the home game.
Or bagpipes.
Charge! He's starting to play more pots as the night went on. We got a warning from the host that we'd be stopping play in 15 minutes.
Okay.
I'm under the gun with ace of hearts, king of clubs, and I guess this is a situation, so... let me make sure if it's a true situation. No, we'll play this as a hand that we give this situation. All right,
wait. You're changing midway. Now I got to write this stuff down. Usually situations, I can just react to it. Now I got to write stuff down.
Cost you anything to write anything down. Gosh.
Oh, man. Well, you
don't even read it. Now you can't even write.
Now I got to find a pencil. And... All right, go ahead.
All right. He's under the gun with ace of hearts, king of clubs. Remember, we have 120 in our stack on our second buy-in.
All right. So I clearly am going to raise this hand. I'm not going to fold it yet, although something tells me that I will want to fold it later. But I'm going to raise. You know, what'd you say it was? 25, 50. Yeah, so I'll make it like $2, $2.50 or so.
Excellent, perfect bet. That's exactly what I heard it as. $2.
Okay.
And apparently that's the table standard raise.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
All right, he gets one call, a fold, and then four more calls. Apparently, the standard raise isn't working at this table.
Wow. So we got like $10 out there.
The villain in the small blind raises to $9. Big blind folds, and everyone jokingly makes complaints about ruining the friendly pot so close to the end. I always hate that. Everybody tries to get in and get unstuck in the last 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, you only got 15 minutes left.
All right, so it's back on our hero, and he says he's got two players behind him still in the hand who play pretty loosely. That information, what do we do with this $9? It's raised to $9, not $9 raised.
It could be a squeeze. Could be someone saying, "Hey, only a few minutes left. No one's going to want to go broke here. And there's already $10 out there. If I raise a bunch, you know, I get them all. All those calls are going to fold because they had a real hand. They would have re-raised an under the gun player. So they probably don't have a hand.
True.
But that being said, yeah, I'll have position on this guy, but there are loose players behind me, so then my ace king is still just a drawing hand against a bunch of other ones. I may let it go. I'm not saying I'm gonna fold right away, Mr. Eric Wellman, but if I'm being smart and I listen carefully to what he says to me, And he says that it's a situation, and he used a lot of A's in there.
A lot of A's, yeah.
I'm wondering if that's a code that we're up against a really big hand here. But that's not really any way to do Hand of the Week, because that's not fair. You got to play it actually as you're playing it. So I don't know. I probably would fold this. That's a huge raise, and it sounds like I have to hit my hand to beat whatever this guy has. You know, I mean, it could be a sort of squeeze play, but it's a pretty big hand.
Yeah, so. I don't like the situation. Ace-King's pretty big hand, but, I mean, that's a 4x raise on top of our already 4x raise.
Right.
$9. And then the only thing I like is that, assuming that the player's behind us fold, which is a pretty loose assumption, we will have position on this guy and can figure out what he wants to do going forward. But I think you're right. I got to hit this hand. I don't know if I'm going to be able to bet this guy off his hand, right?
No. There's no
and
way.
And the fact that we got these two people behind us, too, that he says are loose, right? Fairly
yeah.
loose?
Yeah, loose, yeah.
I can see, you know, in the last 15 minutes, again, I mean, I'm just going based on our home game, you know, the people that are a little stuck loosen up at that point and say, hey, I'm going to go for broke here. You know, either I'm going to go home with no money or I'm going to get unstuck. And so they're more likely to, you know, splash around. And I'm not sure I want to play Ace-King with three opponents, particularly one that obviously is showing some strength.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I really like your squeeze assessment, too, because that's clearly, I mean, that's playing the situation of the night here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a great move. The problem is that if you don't believe him and you re-raise at 30 and then he shoves on you, you're going all in with Ace-King, and this guy's got something like kings or aces, you're screwed.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that. It's hard. It's hard. If you're there playing all night with these people and you can tell what this guy is capable of, then it's something. But when I'm taking it cold like this and I don't know anything about this small blind player, I think my incline would be to go ABC and fold.
All right. So our hero decides to call because he wants to see what the players behind do before he gets too frisky and everybody folds. So we are ends up heads up in position with 28.75 in the pot, and the flop comes out king of spades, tray of spades, seven of spades. Small blind thinks for a bit, and bets $20.
Yeah. Now we're in trouble. You know what I mean? Now we're in trouble. We've already put nine. Plus, we don't have a spade in our hand. You know, so even if we're ahead, you have to worry about him having a spade in his hand and getting pulled out on here. And then you could still have kings or aces, too, and you're literally drawing dead. God, this sucks. I don't know. I've always been made a fool of on this show anyway, but
that's why people tune in every
week. Yeah. See, now here's the deal. If I'm in his situation, if I'm willing to call with ace king, if I hit my hand, I can't let it go. So I might call one street and see, since I have position on him, see mm-hmm. what he does on the turn. Mm-hmm. If a spade comes and he checks, then I'll steal it. Try to steal it. If nothing comes and he goes crazy all in, well, then I'll have to assess and maybe let it go. But he could have just been doing a squeeze and then a continuation bet to give up the impression that he has a bigger hand. So I think I might call here. I don't like the call, and I certainly don't like the raise, because then when he shoves, and I'm just putting away $60 for nothing. So, I think I might just call, try to control the pot a little bit more before I have to commit my entire stack to it, and see what happens on the turn.
I mean, I really like playing our position here. I mean, we hit our king. I mean, not ecstatic about the spades, don't get me wrong, but we hit our king, so at least we got something, right? And the guy thought about it for a little bit, which, you know, you never know what that means. Bets $20, which for this kind of pot, I'm comfortable with. I like just calling here, and if he checks on the turn, regardless of what comes, I'm probably going to put a bet in and see whether I can push him off at that point. Now, he might go over the top with me at that point, but I would rather do that on the turn. I think we have a higher degree of success of getting him to fold there than we do of trying to raise here and have him three bet us.
Yeah.
Because we know we can't call a three bet.
Yeah, no. No. Even no matter what he has, you got to be worried. Even if he has like six deuce, you know, he still has that powerful spade in his hand, you're screwed. You know, because they can easily, you can't beat a flush here if it gets there. So, there are very few, I mean, you can only beat a bluff here or, you know, because I would consider even somebody at pocket queens here, it's a bluff, you know, because the king is on that board. So I might just call and see if he's bluffing. And if on the turn he says, you know what, this guy raised preflop, he called my raise, and now he's called my bet, he's for real, he's got something, he's not going anywhere. He may check the turn, and when he does that, then you can steal it from him. Or just take it with the best hand if he was bluffing. So I don't want to fold, because now as Eric, I have to play this hand as, okay, I call with ace-king, I want to hit an ace or a king, I hit a king, how can I go anywhere now unless I'm getting some huge signals from this guy, which a $20 bet is pretty standard in a $28 pot. So I'm just calling.
Okay. So here are some of his thoughts. He's like, could he have a set of threes or sevens? I feel like the size bet, he is protecting his hand. I think he would have called behind preflop, assuming the people in the pot, and set mine. If he had hit a set on this board, I'm not sure he would have let out so much, but may bet fold to a raise. I think if he had a flush, it would probably be with suited connectors, but again, would have called behind preflop rather than raise. If he had an ace-high flush, I think he would check this flop or bet less for value. He could have one big spade to be drawing, but this bet seems too large for pro bet queen-queen or jack-jack with spade fits the preflop action as well as the big bet post-flop, but again, might fold or re-raise for my two kings. King-king with a spade would be a disastrous, but chance is low. Could he have ace-queen or ace-jack with the ace of spades? If he has ace-king with the ace of spades, would it be a chop? And it would be a chop should no more spades come out.
All right, well, a couple of things. One, he said if it was king-king with a spade, that's impossible because the king of spades is on the board.
Right.
But the other thing is that it doesn't seem like he's giving any credence at all to this guy have made a squeeze play preflop. So... he's putting them on legitimate hands all the way through. So if you're putting them on legitimate hands, and you think, and in this game, if you think that $20 bet is a protecting bet and not a continuation bet, then we're probably beat. Because what would he be protecting against other than the flush? But he's not worried about just kings if he's protecting. You know what I mean? So I feel like he probably does have ace-ace here, or maybe a set of kings, you know, and he's protecting against that flush if that's what he thinks that bet means. So... I'm going to lay it down. I mean, well, I'm not going to lay it down because what he's thinking. I may have thrown that. If I went through that thought process, I might have laid it down. But I'm going to call one more street and just see what happens on the turn.
Well, I think the other thing, too, is that remember, this all spades board or all flush boards, whatever they are, always they're scary for everyone in the hand, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I think there's this thinking that it's scary for us because we don't have the spades and we don't know whether he does. But it's equally scary for the aggressor if he doesn't have spades, right? Because he's got to figure out whether you have spades or not.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I think the fact that you think that, if you're able to bet and if you figured out that your opponent is more likely to fold because he doesn't have spades and the chances of having spades are remote, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to bet with anything here because he and hopefully to get you to fold. So I think you got to consider that as part of any of your scenarios, and he gave all kinds of scenarios to you, but I think that's got to be one of the scenarios. It's just that this guy is c-betting for fear and hoping that we'll just go away because we don't have spades.
We'll see what happens on the turn then, because the turn's going to be, I think, very revealing. If he bets again on the turn when there's a spade, and if his bet is significant, then we know we've lost. But if he bets only a little bit, something that's like almost laughable, then you're gonna know he's afraid of the spade, you know? Because why would he bet if he, you know, if he has the nuts there or something? So he might want to. If he's a tricky player at all, he would check having the nuts there to hope that you'd think that he's afraid of it, and then so that'll get us in trouble too, I think. So let's see what happens. I'm dying to know now.
All right. He says, I think for so long that the other players start talking about how the end of the night is approaching and they may have to call time. the villain is definitely the type who could lay down a draw or non-ace high flush facing a shove. I could see him even folding ace-ace with the ace of spades. I think some more, and they finally give me a one-minute warning. The time runs out, and I decide to shove.
Whoa, what? What? Whoa, that's I never expected that. Holy cow.
And wait for it. He instantly calls and turns over ace of clubs, ace of diamonds.
Ooh. Oh, so he was protecting his hand. He was clearly protecting his hand, and he did have ace-ace. Wow. Oh, man, that's bad. That's a bad situation you're in now, buddy. You need a king bad.
All right, and he says, why did he call?
Why did he call?
But here's why I pull back the curtain to reveal that I was actually the villain all along. All right, so Eric is the ace this year. Pinot is the ace king. So here's the, he's got the question the first. I love these Canadians. Let's just say first question, you save a whole word. Question the first. With the above information on that flop, would you have insta-called with ace-ace? And he's going to give us some more information before we answer. Or actually, no, go ahead and answer that first. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would have called instantly. First of all, there's a lot of money out there already anyway. Second of all, you have an overpair to this board, and the odds of him flopping a flush are so remote that, you know, it would feel like you're shoving with a draw to the flush, and if I know I'm ahead, I'm going to call you. So the only hand I'm really – if you have a flush, I don't think you're going to shove. I think you're going to try to get some money out of me.
What about a baby flush?
Well, would you have raised under the gun with baby cards and then called a $9 raise with the baby cards?
I would have.
Well, see, this is why you're good at limit and not no limit, because you don't think about it.
I would do it to disguise my hand. I mean, my range of hand.
Disguise your... Yeah, okay. Under the gun, I'm going to call...
Under the gun with just ace, ace, king, king, ace...
No, but you don't call a re-raise to $9 with 6-8.
It's the end of the night. I need to get in stock.
Okay, now I'm getting into your brain set. We're going to have fun at the next home game.
No, you're right. You're right. The call after the raise would be the weakness. But I don't have any problem at all raising the $2 with suited connectors.
No, neither do I. I'm talking about the re-raise call. That's crazy. I mean, it's possible, but you're crazy.
Unless you put your opponent on the squeeze.
That's true, but if you put him on a squeeze and you're just playing the player, you just shove.
Aggressive and playing him, playing off of that.
See, now if I had 6-8 and I raised under the gun and then I put him on a squeeze, I just shove.
No, but I got two players behind me. At that point, I want those extra players in.
I just want the money.
It's kind of the weird thing, because if you go back the way we were playing the hand, we didn't want those two other players sticking around, right?
Right.
But if I had suited connectors at that point, if I'm going to get that frisky and out of line, then I need those other players in the hand to make it worth it.
But you want to be in position when you're playing suited connectors. You don't want to be out of position against multiple opponents.
Yeah, but, you know, I want to drive a Ferrari and be married to Kate Winslet. I don't get everything I want.
No, you want the Olympia now. That's
Well, that's true.
And when I say shove, I just mean, like, make a big re-raise. I don't mean put it all in there. I'm just saying, if I knew the guy was squeezing me, I would just 3-bet him and take it down with 6-8, you know, or 4-bet him, whatever. Mm-hmm. All right, so anyway... no, I would have called with ace-ace there. I would have called. Yeah, I would have insta-called. I have an overpair, and if he had... I would put it in my mind that if he had a flush, he wouldn't have just shoved on me. He'd be shoving with a draw or trying to protect his king.
I probably ultimately would have called. I don't think I could insta-call there, because I have to stop and think about whether he has a mate flush already. He very well could have the ace-king of spades, too, right? Because we don't have it.
Right. Well, I think.
So I mean, he could have a legitimate flush. I mean, I don't know why at that point why you would shove.
I think it would have been an insta call because I would have thought of that already when I was making my initial bet. Gotcha. I would have had all the scenarios in my head already that if he shoves on me here, I'm calling because I know he doesn't have the flush already. I would have been thinking that before he made his shove. If I didn't have that time to act, if he had just open shoved and he was first to act, yeah, I wouldn't have called instantly. I would have thought about something. But because I was the first to act, you know, I mean, I would have been thinking about what possible hands he has and what I'm trying to do with my bet and what I would have done to react to his bet. So I think I would have insta-called. I think I'll still say yes to that.
All right, so now he's going to give us more information and ask us the same question again.
Question the second.
don't jump to the question the second. This is information the first.
Okay.
We'll give him the question the second. All right, so here's some more information. He says, a lot of the supposed hero's thoughts are things I would have thought through in his position. However, some are actually known to me because he's talked things through out loud while thinking. Immediately put me on aces with the ace of spades. Then downgraded that to ace X with the ace of spades. So with that, I figured himself did not have the ace of spades. He then pondered aloud that the ace king of spades would result in a chop, which meant to me that he had ace-king, and since the king of spades was on the board, he was as spadeless as I was. When he shoved a half-second after time had run out, I was glad we weren't playing by TDA rules, as his cards would have been mucked. So the question of the second, now do you have insta-called with ace-ace?
You know, I still don't see how that changes. I was going to.
Change anything for you, right?
No.
But it's nice when people talk out loud, and they're sincere about their talking out loud. Instead of the gamemanship.
Yeah.
Mari says, the turn and river come two non-spade, non-king cards, and I scoop in a Brobdingnagin pot, the fourth last hand of the night. I don't know what that is, but maybe that's probably the question means, the first and second.
That means big. It's like Brobdingnagin. I think it's for... I saw it on... the reason I know is because I saw it on Big Bang Theory.
Brobdingnagin. Oh, okay. Right.
Brobdingnagin.
Well, yeah. Big Bang Theory? Okay.
Yeah, it's something to do with a desk. It was pretty funny.
Does the Bazinga dude say...
Yeah, they both say it. It's pretty funny.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, so it was a big bet, big pot, is what he's saying.
He was just referencing one of the shows that I only watch infrequently. So,
sure enough, if he was talking about the Olympics curling, you'd have gotten it right away.
Yeah, well, if he mentioned Penny was going to be involved in his hand, then I'd have been Penny. Interested from the beginning.
Oh man, you're killing me.
Oh, all right. Well, hey, I guess it ended up being a little bit more than the situation.
Yeah, that was good though. But it was good, and it felt like we were. Well, I can't even say we were behind or anything because he was the villain, and I hate when people do that. They just drive me crazy because now it's like, who am I talking about? But nice job, Eric, and way to take down a huge pot. I'd done the same thing. I'd have called instantly. Good for you.
Bazinga.
All right, Scott. Good to have you back. Another good show. We'll pick it up with all that extra news next week. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.